Welcome to St. Mark's Cathedral Conversations, a podcast featuring members of the St. Mark's Cathedral community in Seattle, Washington. These interviews feature lives of faith and adventure, service and connection. Here's our host, Michael Pereira.
Just as a little bit of backstory, sometime in 2016, I forget when, Nancy Martin, who was canon at the church at the time, came over to me and asked if I would take over the hunger offering ministry at St. Mark's. And I'd never done anything like that before, but it was a wonderful introduction into the justice ministries at St. Mark's Cathedral, which are very well known and something that we are very proud of, the work that we do. And part of that work introduced me to Karen Knutson, who is my guest today. So Karen, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you.
To start with, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell us where you came from, if Seattle is your home or not, and from there, how your Episcopal church life began.
I'm very old Seattle. My grandfather came to Seattle in 1902. And my mother's mother, my grandmother, came in 1906. I grew up in Seattle and am a cradle Episcopalian. I started at the age of three at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church. And part of my experience there in our high school youth group was a visit in the evening for Compline at the cathedral during Peter Halleck's early days with the Compline Choir. And I had always loved music. I'd sung in the choir at St. Stephen's. I was immensely impressed. And Peter took me under his wing and ruffled my hair and called me the tall Swede, because I was quite tall and he wasn't as tall as me. And as with the case with a lot of college students, I ended up going to Compline rather than going to a Sunday morning church service because I was a skier. And through college, I found that was the best spiritual home for me at the time. After college, I went to graduate school in Scotland, and that being the mother church for the American Episcopal Church, and the fact that my history professor there was also the lecturer in history at the Episcopal Seminary, I became increasingly involved with the Anglican Church in Scotland, and was also friends with what is the equivalent of the dean of the cathedral, whose daughter had been my friend here in Seattle.
Oh.
So I've had Episcopal heavy, light, and in between. When I came back, I had always been exposed to a broad spectrum of people from other cultures and races because my mother had been born and raised in China. And my father had been at Franklin High School, and many of his classmates in the 1940s, when he was a working man, were his friends from high school who were Japanese who were being sent away. So my father and my grandfather took the household goods from three of those families that were being sent away and stored them in my grandfather's construction company garage. So my immersion in social justice and injustice issues was already longstanding in my family. And exposure to other peoples and cultures was common. In the 1960s, when I came back from grad school, I worked with the League of Women Voters and grabbed a card table and a folding chair and went to the central area and registered voters. So social justice and civic participation were always an issue for me. As I moved around the country with my husband's career, I was invited to serve on vestries in three different places, in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, at Christ Church, at Trinity Church, Princeton. And then when I arrived in Seattle, in 2003, I was asked by the dean of the cathedral, who apparently had figured out some of my background without not telling him, if I would serve a one-year vacancy on the cathedral foundation. My husband and I had gone going back and forth between St. Stephen's and St. Mark's, and the music at St. Mark's was especially powerful for me and for my husband. So I served a one-year term on the foundation, after which I was selected to serve two more terms, each of 3 years. And I didn't have much respite because a year after that, I was invited to join the Vestry St. Mark's. My granddaughter, whom I had been raising, had sung in the choir and was involved in the choir program at St. Mark's when it was very early in its formation, long before the Schola days. And it was a powerful thing for her because her uncles, my two sons, had both been in a traditional choir of men and boys, and then our daughter had also been in an Episcopal choir. So it was a continuation of a long family tradition of choir participation and love of music. Mm. Besides being a PhD chemist, my husband was also a church organist from the age of 16, and it helped put us through graduate school, and it helped us integrate into new communities very quickly, wherever we moved. When I was asked to serve on the vestry at St. Mark's, we were asked to select an area where we might focus our time and energy. And because social justice had been such an important part of my life, I chose to work with the Justice Ministry Coordinating Team and spent 2 years going to the CCD program. And part of the requirement for the CCD program was to find a project and carry it out. And my goal with St. Mark's at that time was to increase awareness of all of the justice ministries at the cathedral. So I bushwhacked and other ways cajoled each head of each justice ministry to participate in an information table at the back of the nave during coffee hour between the 9 and 11 and after the 11 o'clock services. And that was a year-long project. It had incorporated some projects that were already making their presence known with tables, particularly the Mideast Palestinian issue and the hunger ministry. And at seasonal times, the sale of cards for Noel House,
right.
So that there was already some groundwork laid. I am not sure of the long-range impact of that, but the short-range impact was certainly useful for the ministries in terms of recruiting new members to their ministries and to just open exposure other than either in print or online to the people and the practices of each justice ministry. After my term on the vestry, the dean had identified our neighborhood elementary school, Lowell Elementary, as a school with a great need. They had a very high percentage of homeless children and an even higher percentage of children who are on the free breakfast and lunch program. And I chose to join that ministry by volunteering in the classroom 2 afternoons a week on Wednesday and Friday with a second grade teacher whose classroom was quite an exposure to a whole new world for me because I'd never worked in teaching.
Wow.
And these children have both profound psychological as well as educational needs. It was a learning experience from the get-go, and I established some really remarkable relationships with some unbelievable backstories for these children. Some of the children are Chinese immigrants, so English is not their first language. I know a few words of Chinese. Another student was, her first language at home is Spanish, and I do speak Spanish, so that was useful. And developing a relationship with various students who had special needs was probably the most meaningful part for me, one particular child, and I'm going to observe what I would regard as HIPAA rules, where the person will remain unnamed. She volunteered one day when I was trying to help her with her math that she'd been homeless for 4 years. And that was early on, and she was a very cuddly, warm child. I sat with her often during math, because she did have a great deal of difficulty with math, although she was extremely verbal and wrote and read very well. And one day she was very excited and said, "We have a home, we have an apartment, and we're going to be moving." And it was a source of great joy for her. Mm. She drew me a picture of the place that she was going to and described and sort of did a floor plan of what was going on. She said, "There's only 2 bedrooms and there's 5 of us, but we'll work it out." And at the end of the school year, I knew I wouldn't be seeing her anymore. And it was a rather tearful experience for me because I'd become close to this child. I'd shared the joy and liberation of her having a home and her family having a wonderful new chance. So it was the capstone for that year.
Yeah. This goes really deep for you then. The work that you're doing at Lowell, the political activism that you're doing now, and even your initial interest in the justice ministries when you were offered the position of the vestry and knowing that you would have to liaise with a program at St. Mark's, you didn't think twice about doing, I mean, I'm sure other possibilities made themselves available, but you had this strong call to the justice ministries. What does it mean for you for St. Mark's to be a place where this application of the gospel is so central to its identity?
St. Mark's, from its very beginnings, had a great commitment to social justice and to showing the love of Christ as a love of all in the community. And that's part of the theology and my Episcopal background that has always grounded me in what I do and how I do things. I've come with a rather different set of skill sets, having served on the Trinity Vestry in Princeton at the initiation and through the completion of a capital campaign, so that working on the Living Stones effort began just as I was starting to serve on the vestry, and it was deja vu. The mode and the model were very, very different. And it was as much a learning curve for me in working with a new paradigm and a new approach to look at what the goals and objectives of the campaign were and to integrate that into the kinds of social justice things that I think are important. I recognize that in terms of the history of the cathedral, that they had provided refugee protection for people from Vietnam and then people from El Salvador, so that the current program in Sanctuary at St. Mark's is certainly a continuation of that great value. And I worked on the Sanctuary group as a researcher in best practices and interviewed or physically visited 8 different places around the country on their best practices. And the one foundational concept was that we always welcome the stranger. We always have, we always will. It's mandated and called for in Jesus' teaching, and that's a fact that is inseparable from Christian identity.
Yesterday, which was October 21st, we celebrated the consecration of our quote-unquote new cathedral, all completion of all the renovation work, the new baptismal font, the elevator and the annex, the facade, and so many other things. And you contributed a lot to that through the Living Stones campaign. Mm-hmm. What does it mean for you to do that? Because I'm thinking with the work that you do and have done with the vestry, that's a lot of time and effort and energy for which the community is better because of that. But why take that extra step?
Well, having had the experience of a capital campaign, when the whole concept was floated out, I felt I had something to contribute. But my experiences with Trinity Princeton were, as I said, about 180 degrees different from what evolved as the capital campaign Living Stones at St. Mark's. The goals and objectives were far more limited at St. Mark's. Trinity needed $33 million, or they needed $25 million. And it was agreed that there were three major constituencies there. One was bricks and mortar, one was outreach, and one was social justice or that sort of thing. By identifying the three major constituencies of that congregation and agreeing that for every penny that was raised, that it would be equally divided between the three constituencies, we actually exceeded our goal of $25 million. We raised $33 million, which allowed a great deal. We wanted to build an endowment. We had an endowment, and a third was to go to endowment, a third to outreach, and a third to the bricks and mortars needs. And the bricks and mortars needs of Trinity Princeton were as acute as St. Mark's. There were granite blocks instead of cement falling off the outside. And the floors were literally collapsing in some places, like the rector's office. So we met our goals and exceeded them. It's nice to go back to Trinity and see the fruits of that in terms of the renovations that were accomplished. St. Mark's has had the same acute needs, but the scope of the work was bricks and mortar, and a lot of it was more environmentally focused in as much as we were trying to deal with single glazed windows, no elevator, no access for anybody who needed to get from one of the four floors of the building. So it was a different experience because I was an old Seattle person, not only old in my own age, but also because of my family's ties and connections with the community. I was asked to handle the advanced commitments and to do some outreach with people who, may have been Episcopalians, but not members of the cathedral, or who were members of the arts and culture community in the city, on whom I could make a personal appeal because of my long family history here. So I worked on advanced commitments, and then I worked on individual cases of campaigning or soliciting for support, and including all the great, wonderful new things that were happening after a rather brutal history at St. Mark's over the departure of the dean who had invited me to join the foundation and the arrival of the new dean. It was during the departure of the old dean when we had a big gathering in Bloedel Hall. I made the statement that we, the people, are the church, not the dean, not the priest. We, the people, are the church, and it's incumbent on us to make our church, our church, and not just the purview or the province of any one single individual, no matter how dynamic or how compelling that is and how divisive that can be. We have to look at each other sitting in the room and recognize that it is we who are the people. And I think it was that hope and expectation on my part was well fulfilled when we've got our dean, who is an enormously effective leader in not only in the capital campaign or Living Stones, but also in increasing education in so many different realms, welcoming newcomers in so many different ways, facilitating many, many justice ministries that had not really had a visible or outward exposure, but were the trenches in which many people had been working for a long, long time.
That's quite the connection, to have a dean who would steer the ship in the way that he does, but for you to, for your personal interest, to shed light on, as you said, the justice ministries that were not receiving a great deal of light. We have some very prominent ones. We have ones that are much more in the background to their benefit. And so that probably did mean a lot to you to have a dean who would help those ministries find their place in the way that he did.
That's very true. And at the, and always, always, going back to Bishop Curry's comments about the Jesus movement, that's really something that the dean has either overtly or quietly focused on since he came, that first and foremost, we are disciples of Jesus. We believe in a God who is loving, and that is, those are the messages that we really have needed to take to heart more and more.
I like that. It's a wonderful way to tie everything together, that as important as this justice work is in any context, wherever it is, that we have a philosophy that underlines it and moves it forward. And we can name that philosophy as something, our faith, so integral to our faith that it brings it together in a truly wonderful way for me and for you too,
yeah,
I guess.
Certainly.
We've talked a lot about the work of the vestry and the justice ministries, but that's not all you do. You're also a chalice bearer, I believe. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Well, I've been a Eucharistic minister at every parish I've lived in. So I was happy to do that and happy to be asked to serve and happy to serve. I love liturgy. Because I've been an Episcopalian all my life, I've gone through the ups and downs of the ordination of women, changes in the hymnal, changes in the prayer book, every change imaginable that has happened in this church since the 1950s. And I find change to be an exhilarating and positively challenging thing in the life of the church and in my own life. Having moved several places, change is inevitable. And I support well-reasoned and well thought out change that is respectful of those who not only are not as comfortable with changing as much as people who are gung-ho forward change advocates. I think the church as a whole over time has gotten in a much better place, is much stronger for each of the changes that have been made. And I don't relish the idea of ever getting stuck in one place ever.
Well, on that note, as we start to wrap up our time here, I just want to look back for a little bit. You mentioned how your first time at St. Mark's was for Compline services, led by Peter Halleck at the time. Do you remember what your first impression of the cathedral was? Whether it was at Compline or when you first started going to the morning services, your first impression?
I had early childhood impressions of St. Mark's because my grandmother lived just a few blocks away on Republican. And I would sometimes go in there and just kind of look around, you know, just sort of wide-eyed, it's big. But I didn't really participate in any kind of worship service or any spiritual kind of experience until our high school youth group went for Compline. Compline is a profoundly moving thing, especially for me with my love of music. It just resonated. And Peter Halleck's gifts were just so enormous. As I moved around the country and we would go to a new Episcopal church wherever our home was, or visiting Episcopal churches in Paris or in London, the Anglican Church, or in several cities across the United States when we were vacationing, it would be a source of enormous delight to open the service leaflet in my 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s and see a setting by Peter Halleck. Hmm. And when my children were singing in traditional choirs and they would be singing a Peter Halleck setting of something, I would point to that and say, That's when I was 14 years old.
Wow.
So it's kind of that kind of experience, not only the deep resonance of Compline, but the continuing thread throughout the rest of my life has always been really, really wonderful.
That's amazing. Compline.
You can go to St. Thomas in New York, and you can go to Trinity Wall Street. And if you're there on a Sunday and you go for a service, there's a probability that you'll get something done by Peter Halleck.
That's incredible. I mean, Compline has touched so many people. For me, it was one of my first experiences of St. Mark's. I'm sure for literally thousands of other people, but that you had such an early connection to the man who was responsible so much for making that happen here in this community and then communities at large. That's incredible.
Well, and I think Compline too is a true gateway. I think a lot of college students looking for something and not knowing exactly, may end up first hearing it on the radio on King FM and then saying, oh, well, let's go one step further. Let's go. Yesterday, I spoke to a couple who didn't look very familiar to me. They were standing towards the front of the nave and they were looking up at the Flintrop, and I spotted them as newcomers and I walked up and said, do you know some information about our Flintrop? And they said, oh, we used to come here years ago. And I said, well, if you want the information about the Flintrop, there's a flyer out in the narthex. You can pick that up. And they said, well, we listen to Compline on the radio most Sunday evenings. And I said, that's great. Why don't you come on back sometime and actually join us again? We'd love to have you. But it was interesting that it was, and these were people who I would guess were in their 40s. So it was good to know that there was that continuum from a Compline experience earlier to Compline on the radio, and now they're back again. So my closing line with them was, welcome back.
Wow. It really does speak to people in so many different places in their lives that even if they move away metaphorically or literally, that connection never quite fades, it never quite dulls. They still remember what it's like to be in that huge nave, but it's dark and you hear the music, just the pure music there.
And I think too, with our quest as a congregation to more deeply involve younger people, the leadership shouldn't always be gray. It should probably be much, much younger than gray. And accepting the idea that Compline is a broadcast or a podcast is probably a very powerful form of outreach to find younger people where they are and not expect them to come through our door first, but maybe to find us through another way.
A very unique way
that
we are blessed to
have. Well, and we're very lucky that Compline has become much more widely sung throughout the United States because of Peter Halleck's efforts. It's hard to estimate the impact that the man had in terms of the Episcopal Church and even some non-Episcopal churches who have incorporated the concept and practice of Compline into the Lutheran services, and that it's spread throughout the country as a powerful way of meeting people in something other than a straight Sunday morning liturgical worship.
Which again connects to everything. The way you described Compline, meeting people where they are, even if it's not in ways we expect or we're familiar with, is so similar to the justice work of meeting people where they are in ways that sometimes to us can seem completely unrecognizable, but highlights the need for us to go out there and to do that in the same way that the music serves a different kind of need, certainly, but wherever we are on our spiritual journey, there it is.
Exactly.
Karen Knutson, thank you so much for unpacking an amazing story that I'm sure we could talk for hours on end about so many different things, and someday maybe we could do that. But for now, thank you for leading us through just a beautiful experience of what St. Mark's has meant in the past means today in an age of so much injustice, and will hopefully continue to have that same meaning, if not even better, for the challenges of the future. And your work with the justice ministries and through the vestry and activism and advocacy is, I fully believe, a sign of that in practice. So thank you so much for that and for sharing your experiences here.
Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you for doing it.
It's been my pleasure. Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. Our music was performed by Michael Kleinschmidt on the Flintrop organ at St. Mark's. Michael Pereira and Andrew Himes produced the podcast, and we hope you'll visit stmarks.org. So long.